With the Vancouver municipal elections fast approaching, candidates, take your places. This is the Cambie Report mayoral interview series.
We're going to be sitting down with each of the major mayoral candidates over the next couple of weeks, and we're going to be putting these interviews out. The interviews should be about an hour long, and we're going to go through what matters to them, the issues that they want to see, the policy pieces they've put out, as well as get a sense of who they are. If you want to listen to the full episode, make sure that you subscribe to us on Patreon and chip in a couple of bucks per month.
At patreon.com/CambieReport.
And if you'd just like to listen to the 20-minute cut of what we've put together from the interview, this is right where you want to be.
We're sitting down here on August 31st with Shauna Sylvester, candidate for the mayor of Vancouver. Welcome to the Cambie Report.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
And before we get too far in, we should obviously disclose that you are one of our very generous Patreon supporters. We do put up there an editorial policy that we don't accept guidance or sort of background. You direct in any way our content. And we do have a number of candidates among the 53 people, roughly, who are giving us money each month. But I think for transparency's sake, it's worth putting that out there.
And happy to be so. I think that one of the things we need to do in this city is actually support a cluster of independent media.
And we did not ask you to say that.
You did not. No.
So looking at your bio on your website, going into a bit of your background, it says you grew up in Coquitlam, New Westminster, Burnaby, Nanaimo, and Vancouver. That's quite a bit of a range of the Lower Mainland and Nanaimo. Do you want to go explain a little bit of sort of the moving around a bit?
Sure. I was born in Nelson, and my father and mother put all five of us into a station wagon to move down while he went to SFU, doing his PhD. And I think we lived for 7 years in Mayalville and Laval Square on a TA salary. And
back when you could do that.
Well, yeah, and my mother would make bologna look like roast beef. She'd dress it up to make it look like roast beef on a Sunday night dinner. Later, my father was asked to become the dean of one of the first community colleges, and that was City College, right across from City Hall, as a matter of fact, which then became Langara, dean of administration, and then was the president of Malaspina. So we moved a lot as he took on different roles. And my mother also took on different roles as a nurse.
You raised your family near Commercial Drive, and you're now a proud resident of the West End. And how does that sort of shape your view of Vancouver?
Well, 30 years on Commercial Drive is a long time, and it was my home. It was very much my community. And if you've lived on Commercial Drive, you know what it's like. It's a bit like a small town. If you walk down the drive and you don't see three people you know at a given time, then you think something's wrong. It is like a small town. Some people never leave it. So it did give me a sense of an east side part of Vancouver when most of my friends lived on the west side. I didn't want to leave Commercial Drive. I'll be really honest with you. I wanted to find a place I could move. When we sold our place, I was looking to downsize. And there's no density, very little density on Commercial Drive. And it's changed. It's changing. It's becoming very NIMBY. And that's a problem. So then when an opportunity came up to buy into an equity co-op in the West End, I jumped on it. I got it. I was thrilled. I'm a block from Lost Lagoon. I've become a convert of the West End. God, I love the West End. It's kind of like a secret of Vancouver that we don't talk about very much, but what a fantastic place to live.
I guess Stanley Park's not a bad backyard.
It's not a bad backyard, and nor is, you know, English Bay a bad backyard, or Denman Street for every kind of food you could ever want.
Do you find the politics of the people in those neighborhoods drastically different, or do you think Vancouver has a sort of unifying politic in all its neighborhoods?
I think traditionally we had very much an east-west politic and downtown. And that's shifted as gentrification has happened, as people with lower incomes are being pushed out of Vancouver. That kind of differentiation isn't there anymore. I think, you know, it's so interesting. One of the things I love to do with people coming to Vancouver is take them along 25th Avenue and get them to see what changes when you get to Quebec in Ontario.
Right.
I just challenge any of your listeners to do that. Look at the boulevards. Look at the offsets. Look at the canopy. Everything's different when you get to the east side of Vancouver. And I sat on the board of Vancity, and part of the history of Vancity is it was the first financial institution to lend east of Maine. People wouldn't end. So there was this whole history that is very a structural history, and it's an important history. It's a history of immigrants. It's a history of newcomers coming into the east side. That's less its history now. It's now becoming more and more a place where young families, wherever they're from, are looking to get started because the prices were a little lower, and now they're even priced out. So it's an interesting transition we're going through.
But you've also sat on a host of other boards. You're on the board of the Downtown Vancouver Business Improvement Association. You spent 6 years on the Mountain Equipment Co-op board. And I think the question that I would have is sort of sitting on these boards of either nonprofits or semi-profits, I guess would be how I would describe Mountain Equipment Co-op. What does that do for you in terms of your worldview, but also in terms of how does that prepare you to be mayor?
I think one of the things that's really important is good governance in a city. And I see us going into one of the most divisive, potentially divisive city councils we've ever had. I hope not, but it could be. And if you don't have somebody in a mayoral position that understands how to, one, understands good governance, understands what it means to help a group of people work together in the service of specific goals and objectives, as we would have in the city, then it can get really chaotic.
You mentioned partisanship and there, and I imagine in a lot of your past roles, you've come into contact with Vision Vancouver and other political parties at different levels. But then you also kind of highlighted the weaknesses of partisanship when it gets into the staff. You're running as an independent. Do you think, what made you decide to run as an independent rather than perhaps engage with Vision, who maybe you've worked with in the past? I'm sort of assuming you have.
I have, and I think that's not a... We know that I have served
on the
board of Vision and did so proudly in its early years. I don't have a problem acknowledging that. I'm not involved and didn't run for Vision for very, very important reasons. We weren't aligned. And so I think that this is the one time in our history when we really need an independent mayor. And the reason is because I don't think we're going to have any political party that is going to be in a majority position. And if you had a mayor that reflected a partisan and had an obligation to a political party, then what happens is if those people don't align with that political party, they get treated as opposition. And what we have done and have been doing for the last 10 years on, say, and far more than that, is we've treated our municipal government as like a mini parliament with government and opposition. We only have 10 councillors. This city needs our councillors working on their behalf. They don't need opposition parties in city. Everyone needs to show up with what it is that they're trying to achieve. And if there's an alignment, I'm going to support them as a mayor to achieve what they're there to achieve. As long as we as a group determine what are the goals and how are we going to be measured in terms of our performance.
So to follow up on that, let's say, Kennedy Stewart gets elected with 3 Vision councillors. So there's 4 votes on that 10 vote council and the 11 voting members of council. Wouldn't he then have to do exactly what you're saying, which is to try to find partners to run with, try to find people on different issues? Why is being an independent mayor better in your mind than being a mayor that's tied to 2 or 3 councillors but needing to build a coalition?
Okay, so let's just imagine Kennedy does get in. And Kennedy is an NDP. He's got NDP over everything. He was clear in a tweet to Charlie Smith that I am the only NDP candidate running, which is not independent. So he's on council and he's got 4 people. And you've got someone like, say, Colleen Hardwick gets in. Well, Colleen Hardwick could go really very strong after his NDP credentials, start to position the mayor and try and create a situation where he's forced to speak perhaps in against the NDP government provincially. Will he do that? So there's a partisanship that comes into his role as mayor that I would argue would be better that didn't exist in what we're going into. I actually think Kennedy's a pretty decent guy. It's not an issue. The issue is that he's got an obligation to a political party and he has chosen to run his campaign very much aligned to that political party. I don't have those obligations. I've voted all across the political spectrum.
One of the reasons you'll know that people have traditionally run with political parties in Vancouver is the system rewards it. And it's so difficult to get name recognition without the strength of one of those party machines behind you. As an independent candidate, what is your path to victory? Do you think you can win this without, the name recognition of one of the major parties behind you?
I think it's, I'm not, I'm not naive on the difficulties of running as an independent. I think, however, though, that we have right now, is it four or five parties on the center left?
Depends how you count.
Four or five parties on the center right. If I was a voter, I'd be extremely confused of what party was what. I'd be extremely confused about what any party meant because they're so fragmented. What I'm hearing over and over, and I'm out canvassing on doorsteps, is that people are tired of the fragmentation. They're tired of the polarization. I'm breaking every rule in politics. I'm talking about policy. I think there's an adage in politics. You study it in 101, politics 101, is campaigns are not the time to be talking about policy. And that's exactly what I'm doing.
Well, to date, the polls, and we've only had a few out, haven't been as optimistic potentially for your campaign. I forget where the last Mario poll put you, and he's got another one coming up this next week.
11.
You were coming in at 11, and there were about 35% undecided, which still leaves the race pretty open.
I think the undecided vote's far higher than that.
The question, though, comes out, and it gets pushed to sort of every candidate, especially seeing this crowded field of mayoral candidates, is who's going to still be on the ballot on election day? And is it your intention right now? Because I did see a speculation, I think it was in the Georgia Strait, that there's maybe a question mark there.
There's not a question mark right now. I think I think it's really interesting is the only woman on the center left who was in first. The question comes, well, is she splitting the vote? Well, actually, the question is Kennedy, is Ian splitting the vote? Is David Chen splitting the vote? Whoever it is, are they splitting the vote? I came in with the intention of really, really being respectful to understanding where people are at and working with the council that is elected. I really hope that council comes from the center and in a progressive council. I'm here to do that work and to go forward. And to also, I mean, I've got a lot of women, young women too, that there's an expectation that I'm not going to back out.
When you're making your pitch to the voters, you're talking about how you're the most experienced. Who is the stereotypical Shauna Sylvester voter?
I would say the average person that is going to vote for me are people who are tired of the polarization, who want an independent, competent voice, who want somebody that's stable, but has a very strong green and social policy.
We've talked about this a little bit. You know, you said you're breaking all the rules. And one of the rules is major policy planks come out later in the campaign, and if at all. And so you've put out a whole raft of policies so far in the last 2 weeks. What's the strategy there? Why so many policies so early in the game?
One of the things I'm here to do, I'm really clear on why I'm running, is to actually engage citizens in a substantive conversation about their city. Where's it going? What do we want? What are real solutions here? I want to put those ideas into the public arena to give enough time for us to really grapple with them. I want people to give me feedback. I also think it's important to come out front because it also starts to frame some of those conversations. It pushes candidates to say, no, it's not good enough that you're just going to say, fix housing. It's not good enough that you're just going to say, I'm going to clean up City Hall. What does that concretely mean? And I think I've put forward platforms that spells that out.
Before we sort of ask the questions we've identified from your policies, what do you see as the policies that you are most proud of?
I've put a lot of time and energy in understanding housing. And I've spent years and years of my life trying to understand that issue. And let's be really clear, there's no silver bullet here. This is complex. It's going to require every single one of us if we're going to stop the hemorrhaging out of our city. I know people don't prioritize seniors. I know they don't prioritize small business, but those are really important issues for me. I had my mother passed away a year and a half ago, and she had Alzheimer's. And I'm fourth of five children, and we're all very, very strong advocates. It took us 5 years to get her housing and care, and I can tell you it wasn't great housing and care. And for me, I understand what seniors are facing, and it's scary. It's scary in the city. We don't have places for them to leave those single family dwellings to move to. So many of them are alone. They're not getting basic nutrition. They're not getting support. Their family's not living here. They're isolated. Then we don't have places for them to move to. So that's an important issue to me. And whether it's a leading issue for anybody in a campaign doesn't matter. I'm going to talk about it.
But you talk about co-op housing and mixed-use housing in there for seniors, but that also translates into your housing policy, if I read it correctly. Is that true?
Oh, it's a major plank in my housing policy. The whole housing policy, if you look at it, is a story about a different kind of Vancouver. It's a story about a Vancouver that doesn't rely on 25% of our neighborhoods to absorb all of our growth. It's a story about a vibrant, livable city with kids on the streets, customers coming back to our high streets. So having the kind of density so it's not hollowing out, particularly on the west side.
I don't think a lot of Vancouverites know what a co-op is. Do you want to sort of explain what a co-op is, why they're so important, and why it might be such a prescient issue now?
Thanks, Patrick. And I agree with you. And the reason I make it such a pressing issue, it's probably not a huge issue for a lot of people, but this is something Vision could have done something so easily about and hasn't. The key characteristic of co-op housing is it's mixed income. So people would pay market rents, and those market rents would be used to subsidize people who would need subsidy. So generally in a co-op, a third of the people receive some sort of subsidy. And it could be a shelter-based subsidy. It could be somebody living on a welfare or disability, or it could be somebody who's a senior. And then you have, most co-ops have beautiful little courtyards. I know co-ops because my nieces were raised in them, and I still have a lot of friends in co-ops. And they're places where people share daycare. The other day I was knocking on doors at co-ops, and it was just a beautiful thing to see this woman who clearly had Alzheimer's. And in the course of the 20 minutes I was in that hallway, I watched three different residents from other things come and bring her strawberries, check in on her. You didn't answer your phone. Are you okay? I want to make sure. Did you take your meds today? These were neighbors. This is what happens when you're in community, is people look out for you. They know your name. So that's what a co-op is. We need them. Right now, 40 co-ops urgently need their leases renewed. They can't get financing to improve things because the city hasn't renewed their leases. They could have done so easily. I was hoping they'd do it by October 20th, and I don't even think that they'll get one done. Making 6,000 people feel very precarious in their living situation, because I know, having been the facilitator of the Mayor's Task Force on Affordable Housing, there's a lot of people that want that land and take that over, so private sector interests in that land. So I'm not hopeful if Ken Sims gets in on what's going to happen to our co-op sector.
And we've been talking about this a lot, is this idea that 2018 is wildly different than any other election before. We just finished talking about the renters' needs when it comes to vacancy rates. You just finished talking about co-ops. You just finished talking about all of these other initiatives that probably would have been non-starters in any election before today. What do you think makes 2018 so wildly different than the elections gone by, where we had, angry fights over whether or not people should be legally allowed to have renters in their basements? Why is that now it's angry fights about how much more supply we can build?
I think it's interesting. We tend to characterize the West Side in a certain NIMBY way. That's not been my experience talking in living rooms. What I'm hearing is it's hollowing out. They're tired of seeing great big huge mansions empty on every block. They're tired of seeing their small businesses go. And they're mostly, and this is really, really important, their kids can't live here, and they don't know where their parents are going to move into when they want to leave the house. There's nothing for them to downsize to. So all of a sudden, that part of the city, which has, I think, led the not in my backyard movement, is saying something very different. And I think that's kind of exciting. I mean, I do think that that's exciting. The other thing is that I'm going back to an old period when, remember when we would use our arterials for business, and we would put people a block or so off so that they didn't have to listen to the noise.
One of the other things you've talked about in your campaign platforms that have come out so far is the need for reform at City Hall. So maybe you could run us just very briefly through your 5x5 model and why we should change that, and maybe some of the other concerns you have about just how politics is done in the city.
Sure. Now, in my 20s, I used to go door-to-door canvassing for a ward system. And I've changed my mind on wards. I think wards, a full ward system doesn't make sense. I think it can get into what somebody had called the tyranny of the neighborhood association. It can get into different wards fighting against each other, ganging up, and you don't have that full representation. Nevertheless, I think we have a real problem in the city where people feel completely disconnected to their city council. Most people can't name who their city councilors are. They don't feel that they have any relationship. My work in democracy for 30 years teaches me that the closer you come to the people you serve, the closer that representation is, the better and healthier the democracy. So I was really looking for a system that enabled representation without getting too tiny and neighborhood-based, that it would be big enough that you could identify your representative. And then I wanted to really ensure that we had that at-large. The benefits of an at-large system is you have people thinking about the city in its entirety. You have them thinking about the future of the city, and they're not just thinking about their parochial neighborhood. So the 5x5 system is really, I think, the best of both. I'd add in a ranked balloting to that, and I think you've got a pretty good system. I think you definitely have a better system than you have. And but one of the things I love about putting it out there is the debate that that's created, and seeing is there a better system out there. This is the one I'm proposing for now, and we'll see where it lands.
All right, so I think we've covered all sort of the issues that we wanted to touch on in terms of the policy planks you've put forward. There was a bit of a event that occurred yesterday politically, and we figured we'd get your reactions. Do you have any thoughts or considerations on yesterday's announcement on Kinder Morgan that the court struck down the approval process?
Thank you to the Tsleil-Waututh and the other Indigenous people who have stood so strongly and so steadfastly against that pipeline. I have never been in support of the Kinder Morgan pipeline. My world, though, is I did not stand up and get arrested, because the work that I've been doing is trying to work in getting the alternatives and moving the renewable energy agenda forward.
Do you think it's the role of the mayor of the city of Vancouver to be active in speaking out on projects like that?
Absolutely active if it affects the city of Vancouver. We have an economy that depends on our coastline. We have an economy that's tourist-based. We cannot have a spill in our waters. We also stand in alliance with First Nations and with our community here.
And just one last follow-up to that, is you're talking about the Indigenous people in consultation. We've seen a lot of attempts to reconciliation, indigenization. Lisa Helps, the mayor of Victoria, recently removing the statue of John A. MacDonald and other things. What can the city do, and what do you want to see the city do to further reconciliation goals and indigenize our community?
I'd like to decolonize the legislative process we have in this country. We're still with the Indian Act. I think that there's a great deal, but I want to sit down and understand what our communities here, what the nations here feel are our greatest priorities. But I think we've got a lot to do in terms of decolonizing our administrative systems. I think we've got a lot to do in terms of fair and just processes. And I need, one of the things that we've got to do is have more people who are Indigenous working at the city and in our processes as well. So those are some of the basic things that we need to be doing.
As we're coming to the close, I think we can maybe step out of the political realm for a bit and just talk a bit more about you personally. What are the kind of things that you enjoy doing that aren't hyper-political, that aren't, you know, listening to politics podcasts and getting on running for mayor? What are your hobbies or interests?
So I'm dying right now because I'm looking up at those mountains and I haven't gone hiking. I love hiking. I love camping and cross-country skiing. I love going up to Nelson and doing kind of historical tours of British Columbia. I'm fascinated with this history with our city and with our province. I'm not sure I'm there yet on the sailing, but I'm going. My partner, because he likes to sail, so I'm going to join a sailing co-op. Maybe I'll learn how to sail, like to kayak, those sorts of things. I also love dancing.
What kind of dancing?
Just about any kind of dancing. But I grew up, I did ballet, I did figure skating, I did even went and did some dance at SFU. if there's not going to be fun parties and things that I go a part of, I can't see myself enjoying the job unless there's some fun in this as well. So
going into a bit of Vancouver past or present, what's your favorite band or musician to ever come out of Vancouver?
Band or musician coming out of Vancouver? I mean, I love Spirit of the West because I said I love dancing, so it's fun. I used to love listening to the words, like I was at the Folk Fest, so you know, the Stephen Fearings of the world. God, I even know some of the words to Pair of Pied Pumpkin, but I'm aging myself on that. I'm not. I tend to be more jazz oriented, and I went to school with Diana Krall. She's in Nanaimo. She doesn't Vancouver, but that's sort of more where I'm at. Is more jazz.
Many musicians were featured in Justin McElroy's recent poll of who should be Vancouver's unofficial ambassador. Who would you have picked out of that, or were you happy with the results of Canuck the Crow?
I love Put a Bird on It. I thought, oh God, if we become Portlandia, Put a Bird on It. I thought that was great. It was fun. Who would be my unofficial ambassador? I don't know. She's not from Vancouver, but I used to love Katie Lang. I'm old enough to have seen Katie Lang live when she would, you know, do a New Year's thing. Yeah. Even the rockabilly. When I was young, the Savoy existed lots and lots of rockabilly stuff there. And yeah.
So that leads really well into the next question, actually. You know, we're 32 years on from Expo 86 when Vancouver transformed itself into a global city, and, you know, 8 years on from the Olympics when we did it again. What venue, location, thing has Vancouver lost that you miss the most?
I feel like Vancouver lost a really vibrant, interesting downtown east side during Expo. I mean, the Expo, I think, was the beginning. I used to work at Woodward's and downtown, and that was the beginning of what we're seeing now, and the renovations that happened through that period displaced so many people. So that's not a great thing. So what are some of the things that we've lost? I did like going to the Savoy.
I think the Savoy is a great answer.
Yeah,
I would have argued, if I was asked, I would say the Marine Club was the place that I went to for rockabilly all the time.
There was also a place called The Cave.
Oh, yeah, The Cave, yeah. I've heard stories.
I went when I wasn't legally aged to go there, but that's where we would sneak into if we could get into The Cave as young people. Oh, and then there was The Love Affair.
Oh, yes.
The Love Affair. Okay, I'm going back. The Love Affair was this fun place where that was more new romantic.
Yep.
And yeah, 1982, Dancing in the Love Affair, or 1980. No, I would have been of age in those days. So 84, 85. Yep. Sorry, guys. I'm going back in history.
Oh, that's okay. The last thing I want to ask is, what is your favorite park?
You know what? My favorite park, Trout Lake. It's a gem. I feel like I grew up around Trout Lake. And there's this time of the day, especially in the winter. It's usually late at night. And it's just when the fog comes down and you've got the willow trees above the fog and it's just this stream. It is such a diamond in the rough there. And not a lot of people know about it. It was probably just fine. But I love Trout Lake.
All right. And our last question, and we end all of our shows with this, is our Vancouverada, which is something about Vancouver's history or Vancouver that people may not know about that you'd like to sort of put a spotlight on.
I have these really interesting memories as a kid. We would come into Vancouver, and a big deal for us, because we didn't have a lot of money, was we would go down to Chinatown for dinner, and then we would head down to Gastown on our way to Stanley Park to look at things. And there was this period in my background where you would see lined up on Water Street, it was like flower power, this incredible flower power hippie center. And I was young enough that I remember it, but I don't remember it clearly. And I haven't seen pictures and so I would love to see from the Vancouver archives pictures of that period. It would have been the early 70s. And it would have been around the time of the riots, I think. And now you have
that was the Gastown riots.
The Gastown riots, but going down.
We have to specify in Vancouver which riots.
Oh, so yeah, exactly. That's the Gastown riots.
There's a Wikipedia
riots.
List,
yeah.
Actually.
Oh wow, yeah, the Gastown riots. But yeah, I just have these really distinct memories of that as a young kid, and I'd love to see more of that social history. I've never seen it.
It's a really neat one.
Well, I think that about wraps up all the questions we have. You've been more than generous with your time and very candid, and we appreciate that. So thank you for coming on the Cambie Report.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here and enjoyed this.
I guess we should ask you to give a plug to where people can follow you if they want to find out more about your campaign.
ShaunaForMayor.ca. And also, if you're on Facebook, go to Shauna Sylvester's, a page on Facebook. But the thing I'd like to ask is, because I'm applying for a job, really, I want the city of Vancouver, the people of Vancouver, to evaluate whether or not they think I'm qualified for that job. And I think the best way to do that is through LinkedIn. So connect with me in LinkedIn and tell me privately or publicly what you think is working and what's not working in this city. One of the wonderful things that I've been doing over the last 4 months is having conversations with people. And boy, I'm learning a lot. It's fantastic.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Have a great day.